A shooting on Martin Luther King Day at the downtown Jacksonville Landing again calls attention to gun violence here in the 904. Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or through the WJCT app. Just ahead, looking for positive ways to curb violence here on the First Coast as we take your calls. Get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later we meet the new dean of the University of Florida College of Medicine here in Jacksonville, plus an interview with Emmy-nominated singer-songwriter Eric Taylor. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, it was a frightening scene at the Jacksonville Landing yesterday, just hours after the annual Martin Luther King Day parade passed by. A teenager was shot and killed, and another one injured by gunfire, while others scrambled for safety. Now, a similar shooting incident happened a couple of weeks ago at the downtown Art Walk. That incident led police to hold a press conference and encourage people not to fear coming downtown for events. JSO also says this morning the two incidents may be related. As police investigate, community leaders are calling once again for solutions to this consistent, senseless violence happening in Jacksonville, plaguing this city and also around the country. Right now, we welcome life coach and metacognition expert Grayson Marshall Jr. He speaks about this issue to youth groups, companies, schools, and nonprofit groups. And this morning, he joins us with his thoughts and takes your calls. Good morning.
Hey, Melissa. How are you?
Great to see you. And as we speak with life coach and author Grayson Marshall Jr., we want your calls about the shooting at the Landing and the continuing problem of gun violence here in Jacksonville. Get on the line now. We're already getting your calls at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet us, or weigh in on Facebook. So, Grayson, let's talk about what we know so far. Kamoi Peterson is dead, 10 days shy of his 17th birthday. He was killed in the shooting incident at the Jacksonville Landing yesterday. Another teenager injured. This after two teenagers were sent to the hospital during the first Wednesday Art Walk in downtown Jacksonville just a couple of weeks ago. The sheriff's office thinks these two incidents may be connected. As we wait to find out more, people are so saddened and appalled to see that young people are opening fire on each other on what's supposed to be a day of joyfulness and a day to celebrate nonviolence, mm-hmm. Martin Luther King Day.
And you know what's funny is that I don't think they really even understand conceptually what that means, Melissa. I'm called a metacognition expert for this reason. Metacognition means understanding and awareness of how you think. And the kids that are in the world today are living in an unbelievable sense of fear. They fear everything, especially minority kids. They fear where they are in life. They fear the environment that they live in. They fear the familial aspect that's nothing structured that can seem to be confidence or peace. Mm-hmm. So the result is action after emotion, as opposed to understanding that emotion should be dealt with internally and then moved. So there's an impulsivity, there's a radical approach to it, and it has everything to do with their surroundings, their environment, music. All these things are vital characteristics in what's there. So ultimately, there is a machismo that lives with these guys to say, because I mentally can't process what's going on around me, I'm going to effectively do what I feel is the natural man thing to do. And it's resulting in such devastation, so many kids being killed. And that's why we want to implement a different message. I think that when we look at the religious circles of church, they want to see this differently. But ultimately, a lot of religions in and of the way they are fear-based. So it is fear on top of fear. And what we can't do is have fear be the answer for positivity. From a biblical standpoint, 1 John 4:18 says, perfect love casts out all fear. Well, what's perfect love? Perfect love is agape love. Agape love is unconditional love. The problem is that we've always understood, or we believe to understand, that agape love is something that comes from God to his people, or from a mother to her children, that unconditional love. Well, a lot of kids don't have that and don't feel it. But what we misunderstand is that Grayson can have unconditional love for Melissa. And when that becomes the horizontal way we live, all these things that plague us are mitigated. But what we don't have is that we have very conditional love. I conditionally love you if you're white and you're nice to me. But other than that, then I'm not going to be. And so there's conditions based on everything. So we really don't live in a true understanding of what agape is, which is why the book that we did is Do Positive Just Because. Do Positive Just Because mirrors agape love. If I do something just because, there's no expectation, there's no reciprocity, there's no reciprocal act that you have to give me. And it's amazing that we find ways into that being after tragedy, disaster, or something that national. So this right here will rally people of all colors, all ages, all races because of something that happened. Well, what if we just did that anyway? If that was the precedent that we set and everywhere that we went, if we gravitated toward that more than the opposite, then we would have better and different results.
Jammed Lines, as we talk about this problem in Jacksonville after another fatal shooting at the Jacksonville Landing, we'll go to your calls in a moment for Grayson Marshall Jr. And as you said, young people, young men especially, don't feel loved and supported. They can lash out. They can act out violently. This is an issue that city leaders have been aware of and have been trying to address for so many years now. And we've seen efforts come and go and be revitalized, efforts to work with young people in the way you're talking about, wrapping them around with services, social and emotional support, academic support, efforts to strengthen stressed families. All of these efforts are so well-intentioned, and yet we continue to see this problem with this incredibly depressing regularity in Jacksonville. What we're doing is clearly not working well enough.
It's a mixed message, Melissa, and here's the problem. We have leaders from the religious sector that are in pulpits on Sunday preaching agape love, and then on Monday protesting inconsistency. Either it is agape love all the time, or it's not agape love all the time.
What would you say to those listening? I'm sure we'll take some calls who say, we don't need to give agape love to kids. We need to teach them that this kind of behavior is and lashing out with violence is not acceptable.
And that is teaching agape love. So that's the reality. We can't separate the two. Either it is love or it isn't love. And that's the way it has to be. It's unfortunate, but again, the reality of it is that there's more fear. As fear is masked in faith. Either you have faith, Melissa, or you don't. You can't be in both worlds at the same time. You're either in faith or you're in fear. And unfortunately, we're in more fear than faith.
Let's go to your calls now for author and life coach Grayson Marshall Jr. We had actually booked him on the show some time ago. Mm-hmm. And then it just so happened, as he wanted to talk about the issue of youth violence, and then it just so happened that on the Martin Luther King holiday just yesterday, we saw a tragedy at the Jacksonville Landing where a teenager was shot and killed and another one injured. Let's go to your calls. Let's begin with Herman, who's downtown. Hi, Herman. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you doing?
Okay, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Good. Good morning to you, Grayson.
Hey, Herman.
Name you won't recognize, but you and I have had the opportunity to sit at the feet of a great bishop here on the west side in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
And good morning to you.
Good morning.
However, I think my message may be a little bit different. And my solution to what I'm calling for is that this starting Sunday is that all leaders and everybody, the total city of Jacksonville, would submit to 30 days of prayer and fasting, talking to their Savior. I would agree, like Melissa, I'm kind of confused, but I'm not confused. I think that we've lost our way. We've called on several mayors. We've called on the Jacksonville Journey. We've called on presidents. We've called on parents. And none of this will work. None of this will work. So I just think that we need to go back to the basics of starting Sunday. Is what I'm calling everybody to do is to repent for, including myself. I have not properly led my home. I have not properly led my children, and there just needs to be a repentance for that, for the things that we have not done, and to say, hey, we just need to form a spiritual solution and turn back to that spiritual guide to get us out of this darkness. But again, it's priorities, ethics, morals, a lot of stuff. And no social program. Only thing that's going to fix that is a right relationship with our Savior.
All right. Thanks, Herman. Thanks, Herman. I appreciate that call. Thank you, Herman. And, you know, surely a lot of folks of faith agree with Herman. There are those out there who would strongly disagree. They would say, "This we can't pray our way out of this problem." So, but as we continue to take calls, what are your thoughts?
Oh, there's nothing wrong with prayer. I have no problem with that. The problem is most people pray and they doubt. First John and James 1:5 it says, if any man has doubt, he should not expect anything from God. What he did say that was ironic, and that was really the issue, was the personal accountability he had to take for not handling his own home. In the book, we talk about personal accountability. The very first key is own where you are today. No excuses, no explanations.
What do you think about, there have been efforts, many efforts over the years to strengthen families, reach out particularly to young men who might not have a strong male role model in the home, which is can be such a huge issue in a lot of local families. What do you think of the efforts so far in Jacksonville to address that piece of the problem?
And what he said, social programs aren't going to fix it. The end game here, Melissa, is we've always tried activity for resolution as opposed to shifting the way that we think for resolution. You can't, Einstein put it like this. He says you can't fix a problem with the same mind that created it. And that's why programs aren't going to fix anything. If you don't shift the way this thing works, then you're never going to get different results. The subconscious mind, the conscious mind battle constantly. And if you do not fix the subconscious, if you do not change the movie that's been playing, if you do not change the activity and the mental result that comes from it, you're never going to get any new thing in the new place that you want.
When you go and you speak to youth groups and schools and you talk about that, what kind of change do you see?
Amazing change. Why? Because they don't realize that's the problem. They don't realize that's where it is. They see what's there and they want to fix what they can never control. The only thing that you can control is you. I can't control Melissa Ross. I can't control anybody else, but I can control Grayson. Now, if I understand what makes Grayson tick, and if I can change what Grayson does, then it automatically affects the change around me. Why? Because in order for things to change, you must change. And that's what we have to get to. And I think that's what Dr. King was talking about. He wasn't talking about a societal move. He was talking about each individual changing the way that they think about each other, about they do every day. Because if you can do that and everybody does that, it effectively changes the larger portion and picture that we're looking at.
And so many people wanting to weigh in right now as we speak with author and life coach Grayson Marshall Jr. about the fatal shooting yesterday at the Jacksonville Landing that killed a teenager and injured another teen. Let's go now to Bob. He's at the Maritime Academy. Is that right, Bob? Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, I'm with First Coast Maritime Academy. We are partnered with Mad Dads, and what we're doing is we're attempting to change the mentality of some of our youth by training them to become merchant mariners and getting them employment, which will change the socioeconomic environment they live in. I'm rather disappointed in how our city does not support efforts like ours. And other efforts that should be going along with this. We don't seem to have an approach that addresses all of this stuff. Most certainly, we have to understand that the philosophy of how you live has to be improved, but also we also have to step in and do reality stuff like making sure the environment changes so that these young men can go out and look at themselves with pride and say, gee, do I want to buy a Corvette or a Viper? I think without approaching the whole thing, we're kind of wasting our time.
A holistic approach. Thank you, Bob. Bob calling from the Maritime Academy. You know, and I've mentioned this so many times on this show, I feel like I'm a broken record, but some years back, the city put together what they envisioned as a comprehensive approach to this issue of violence in our community, the Jacksonville Journey. It has been revived somewhat under the new mayor, Lenny Curry, but without the funding that it had in the past, without the it's not quite as comprehensive as it was originally envisioned to be. Now, as you just said, you don't believe social programs can address this problem. But at the same time, those that supported the initial effort felt that it was starting to make a difference. When the bottom fell out of the economy, it saw a lot less funding in terms of after-school programs, programs for ex-offenders leaving prison and needing to find jobs, and a host of other things. Things that have been proven to work in other cities to reduce violence. So, you know, I while you talk about changing mindsets, what about the city's commitment to that program and other ones?
We need to have those. And those are supporting elements to it, Melissa. What I wanted to make sure that was clear is that those can't be the only thing that we do. Because then we become, then we're just housing a problem and fortifying it in different places. What we have to be able to do is shift them mentally and then put them into, just like the guy from Maritime just talked about, put them in positive places that can help them see those things. When you look at some of the critical pieces of how individuals are, socioeconomic status is a very, very immediate influencer on the attitude of young people. So when you can get them into a place where they're self-sufficient, where they're doing some things and moving forward, anything positive is going to be productive. So yeah, you definitely have to have that. What we've done is we've thrown this in, we've thrown a bad mindset into the program. And all it does is create a bad mindset in the program. You've got to address this first and then put them in there. And that's the beautiful part about what this shift in the mindset will do.
549-2937. Liam is in Riverside. Hi, Liam. Good morning.
Good morning. First of all, this has been a great discussion. I love the way that you guys have been approaching this issue. I think you touched on a bunch of very important points in that this is a multifaceted issue that that doesn't have a single fix. Just attacking guns, just installing ShotSpotters, just having programs. None of those individual things are going to fix this. And I think the big reason is nobody feels connected to anyone anymore. There's really no such thing as community. You've lived next to your neighbor for like 8 years. You don't know the guy's name. You avert your gaze when you check the mail at the same time. And when you don't feel connected to other people, you can harm them, and you don't feel that in yourself. Like, your mirror neurons don't activate. Your empathy is not affected in that equation. So I feel like a big part of this is the fact that we're all atomized. And so when you're by yourself, when you don't have a support network like holding you down, that buffers you from the like extremes of life, it's real easy for somebody by themselves to get pushed to the point where they can lash out like this. And so, of course, there's no one fix, but the fix is kind of everything. The fix is the programs. The fix is you know, you can't control your neighbor, but you can influence them, and they can influence you. And how do we grow as people? We grow as people by internalizing what's going on with those around us, by bringing their lives into ours and bringing our life into theirs. And until we start to restore strong communities and you know, care about one another on a more like fundamental level than you can do something for me, it isn't going to really change. But you know, that said, it's not like an epidemic, because an epidemic kind of travels at a logarithmic or exponential rate, and we don't see this happening everywhere. We just see a constant background noise of the same sorts of incidences repeating over and over again. And, you know, I'm just hoping that, you know, we can maybe figure out a way to abate them a little bit and try to see where they're coming from and try to focus on those areas and restore those communities in those areas specifically. And I think like that's really the only approach available to us, because we can't just attack the tools because we're just treating symptoms without going after the cause.
Thanks, Liam. But, yeah. Thanks, Liam. That's Liam in Riverside.
Yeah, you know, he talked about the isolation, Melissa, and what I've done, and I've looked at research that no matter where these kids are in socioeconomic, they usually have a cell phone. The cell phone activity is literally releasing dopamine.
Sure.
It's been proven.
For all of us.
So the reality of it is that
people are addicted to it.
And we have recovery for alcoholics. We have no program set for this dopamatic mindset that we have. So here you have kids that are needing reinforcement. They're needing approval. They're getting it through a like, a tweet, a this, that, and the other. So there's this high, there's this energy that goes on there. And when that isn't supported, somebody dislikes me, somebody unfriends me, mm-hmm. somebody does those things, mm-hmm. it's almost like a literal withdrawal from a
chemical high.
Correct. So yeah. So all these things play in that we ignore these things, and
but for all we know, we don't know with this incident.
Correct.
But it could have involved some sort of disrespecting of one kid to another. We'll have to see what the police say.
Yeah, this becomes the standout result, and whether it was directly related or not, it is an influential part of the youth of today. And more of this happens, so we have more depression now, we have more suicide, we have all these things, and technology and isolation, was my point, is causing a lot of this, and they're finding mm-hmm. solace in a place that's literally addicting.
It's an interesting insight as we speak to Grayson Marshall Jr. about gun violence in Jacksonville. Another tragic shooting just yesterday at the Jacksonville Landing, several hours after the Martin Luther King parade, killed a teenager here in this city and injured another one. And lots of calls from all of you out there. Let's go to DJ in Northwest Jacksonville now. Hi, DJ. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, Marshall.
Good morning.
Grayson Marshall. I am very elated to hear you this morning, having worked on both sides of the fence as a corrections professional and now in an early childhood educational setting. And I feel that the points that you're making are very positive and are useful in an early childhood educational setting, because when we work with young people early, we tend to teach them the tools they need for survival. And I'm interested in knowing how you became a life coach, and what was your life experiences that led you to become what you are today? Because a lot of times we need to hear those examples in a positive light so that we know that I too can do the same thing.
Well, I can tell you this.
Thanks, DJ.
I appreciate it. I can tell you this, that would be a whole nother show. But what you can do, and I hope Melissa will let me do this, if you go to graysonmarshalljr.com and leave me a message, I'll be more than happy to do that. I travel around and I share from my heart the true essence of it. I was sharing with Melissa earlier. I was a college basketball All-American. I'm an ACC basketball legend. I'm in 2 Hall of Fames. I was homeless at 29 years old. So there's a whole lot that
homeless
goes through
at
that.
29.
Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot that goes through.
So wait. Let me go back to that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about that. Mm-hmm. You grew up in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. went to college at Clemson, uh-huh. basketball star. Mm-hmm. So then homeless at 29, mm-hmm. what happened then?
My mother's a principal, my dad was a teacher, my sister went to Wharton. So I grew up in house full education. The end result of me was I didn't want to be a teacher. So I had an entrepreneurial mind, and I entered into the world of entrepreneurism with no coach, with no teacher. So just like anybody else entering into somewhere, no matter how intelligent you are, no matter how smart you are, if you don't understand the lay of the land, you're going to be owned by the land itself. And for me, I had to go through and literally learn a lot of this on my own, which is why I give so much back now. The critical thinking, the mindset that had to be adopted, I learned a whole lot later in life. There was a thought process that had to go with my parents, as great as middle class was, it was survival mode and it was fear-based every day. The fear of losing that job, the fear of doing this, the fear of not going, all those things. I didn't want those things. And so I literally ventured out into a different world. I had to bring in some different experiences. I had to be open to some folks. I had to be open to some different religions, belief systems, all these things that weren't going to change who I was, but had to be in perspective of who I wanted to be. And that in and of itself created a new mindset for me. And the word tells you, be ye not conformed to the things of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind.
But what caused the homelessness?
Not knowing when to make the right decision. So, for example, I got into entrepreneurism. I got into C-band satellites 6 months before DirecTV came out. So there were a whole lot of things.
Things like that, yeah.
Because I didn't understand. So it wasn't, again, it wasn't misinformation. It was misunderstanding and timing. And I really realized that my college degree was only enough to get me started. It wasn't enough to take me to prospering. So I needed more, and I needed more information. So I wasn't pushing a cart, but I didn't have anything to call my own. And I was able to turn that completely around now and have a phenomenal life. And it's no rags to riches story because I don't ever think I was desolate, but I didn't have anything of my own. And I knew how to build that, but I didn't build it through my activity alone. I built it more through the shift in my mindset.
Let's go to Bailey. She's driving through town. Hi, Bailey. Good morning.
Hello, Molly. Good morning. How is everyone doing today?
All fantastic. Right, thanks.
Okay, I just want to let you know, I work with a lot of youth in Jacksonville. I'm not just black youth, but I am an entrepreneur. I have my own business. But I think some of the comments that I'm saying is that we are not really making parents accountable. And I've always had a philosophy, if you're on public assistance, and you can't even afford to feed yourself, why would you bring any children in the world? Because they didn't have to come here. And so we give them a very bad slight before they even get here, and we can't support them. So I think somehow with this whole conversation, we need to somehow make sure that they're accountable. We have to figure out how can we do this.
Thanks, Bailey. Thanks for the call.
And that's why I alluded to the first key in the book that I just gave you, Melissa, is the hardest one. And it's own where you are today. No excuses, no explanations. That's the toughest key, personal accountability. It's the one thing that dependency doesn't allow you to do. And she talked about government systems. We talk about all these things. We're dependent on a lot. We're dependent on other people's influence, philosophy, direction. We're dependent on all those things. And what's happened is we have lost the ability to think for ourselves. And that's what we have to get back to. A lot of the things that we face, a lot of things that we experience are based on someone else's influential mindset to give it to us. Now, do we need instruction? There's no two ways about it. The Bible says you have 10,000, you have fathers, but not instructors. And the reality of it, we have 10,000 instructors, but not many fathers. And we're missing those things. We have a lot of people giving us information, but we don't have a lot of people raising us the right way. Mm-hmm. And the raising of the right way is not only an action, but it's a mental approach to everything that we do.
And we're getting lots of emails and tweets from you. Here's one from Clayton. I agree with your guest. Faith will change the mentality and hearts of people. When faith-based groups fail to practice agape love and act just like these young people who act out upon being disrespected, nothing will change. Here's another tweet, though, from Adam. We need to value critical thinking and reason over faith. We can do a lot of good in this community without a God. All right, let's go to Chuck at the Beaches. Hi, Chuck. Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Hi.
I'm one of the premise just by saying Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, and the Freedom Riders are some of the greatest Americans that ever lived, and they are my heroes. Now, having said that, you're talking about faith. I'm a deacon in a church, taught Sunday school for 20 years, and I understand what you're talking about agape love. You can't earn it. You don't deserve it. It's from God. However, the churches have failed. Think about Rosa Parks and all of those people down there in on the streets. I'm a Southern Baptist. We had to apologize for what we taught and how we acted.
No question.
Those people on the street that were abusing those people were born-again Christians. Now, let me premise this and move into the next thing. What I think we should do is we should use our school system. Think about this. You talk about anger. Let's talk about road rage, anger management. If you took, when kids went into the preschool, you spent 20 minutes, 3 days a week. I worked it out. By the time they get in the ninth grade, that would be 5 40-hour weeks of instruction on social skills. And people like Melissa could go into the classroom, and you could have role-playing, and you could teach anger management and social skills. And if only 50% of them got it, and you could lessen the road rage by 50%, or you could endear children and teach them to love their neighbors and to get into the community and use their gifts by role-playing, by people mentoring them in the classrooms, 20 minutes a day, 3 days a week, people like Melissa and you coming in and teachers. We could change, but we're not going to do it. I've said this. We have the school systems. We don't use it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Chuck. Thanks for that call. Let's go to Tina in St. Augustine. Go ahead, Tina. Okay, we lost Tina.
Good morning.
Oh, hey, Tina. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
And good morning to your guests, to both of you. I just wanted to chime in. I have a question for your guest. What are some of the solutions that, you know, that you see to kind of help bring some of the agape message to parents or to the caregivers of some of these kids? I just kind of think we should kind of start from the beginning instead of the end with the kids because, you know, children may not have the skill set to really be able to interpret the word and apply it to their life. But if you kind of start from a holistic approach of, you know, kind of building those resources around their household, mm-hmm. and for a lot of the kids I know, they are in foster care, so a lot of those kids are bounced around, you know, between household to household, and it sort of interferes with their, you know, their family stability.
Sure.
And so it starts to kind of gnaw away at their self-confidence and self-esteem a little bit. So I kind of wanted to, you know, get your thoughts.
Yeah. Thanks, Tina.
Mark 7:13, the Bible says the tradition of man makes the word of God in none effect. And when he's talking about traditions, talking about our common practices, that has everything to do with our government, our social systems and everything. What we have adopted is the way we do things, it takes out those things. So what you have to do, and what she asked me was, what can we do? We have to understand the lay of the land, and you still have to get personally into a personal shift. That's what it comes down to. When I look at where things are, Melissa, and I see, and the deacon talked about the churches have failed and all these things, I don't put any blame on an organization. The blame goes to the people inside the organization, the ones that have control over doing anything. We talked about classrooms. If teachers were able to teach, I think we'd have more in there. But when teachers have to teach for a test or when teachers have to teach for certain budgetary reasons, they lose the complete essence of who they are and why they're teachers. We have to get back to the simplicity of life. Why has life gotten so complicated? I don't know.
Well, her call was about the family.
Mm-hmm.
How do we strengthen? For me, I think that really is so critical. How do we strengthen families in this community? You know, there are a lot of efforts to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Even the school system now has a parent academy.
Mm-hmm.
When you go out and talk, you're talking a lot to kids. What about the parents?
I do a lot of talk to parents.
Uh-huh.
I do a lot of talk corporate. You have to address the parents in order to address the kids. There's no two ways about it. I think the problem is that parents and older folks, Melissa, they're reluctant to change.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing. You have to be open. Openness is the whole key. And like I said, for me at 29, I had to be open to some different philosophy, open to some different things. Some people are so set in their ways, it's not going to change, which is why we do make an effort to go after the young folks and represent them with a different way of thinking. And I tell folks all the time, I'm not here to convince you to do anything. I'm here to present something to you, till you can open your mind and make a personal decision and choice on your own. Because when you leave me, because that's the whole key to this, when you leave me, I want you to be able to go do that. I have four kids. And I have four grandkids, and my kids, my whole message to them in their imperfection, in their choices and everything, it's yours. You chose it. Now let's deal with it. Why did you make that choice? Why did you have that? Why did you do that? Do they always make the right ones? No, they're human. But my onus is to say, you got to own that decision you made. That was your decision. Because if I'm not here and I'm not here to do that for you, I got to know that you can practically go through, move through all of what it takes to deal with it, own it, and move forward and not have it own you for the rest of your life.
Thanks for being with us.
Oh, I had a good time. This is great.
He's author and life coach Grayson Marshall at graysonmarshalljr.com. He joined us as we looked back at a day of violence in Jacksonville on the Martin Luther King holiday, and much more still ahead. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, dozens of Democratic members of Congress say they will boycott Donald Trump's inauguration on Friday. It's a break with tradition, when lawmakers usually come together to mark the peaceful transition of power. Is this the time to take a stand, or are they setting a bad example on a day that's supposed to be about the United States of America? That's next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Giuseppe Verdi was overseeing opera rehearsals when his star soprano got sick and the opera had to be delayed. To pass the time, Verdi wrote a string quartet. Later, he said, "I don't know if it's beautiful or ugly. I only know it's a quartet." Verdi's one and only string quartet on the next performance today from APM.
Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, he is the brand new dean of the UF College of Medicine here in Jacksonville. Dr. Leon Haley Jr. is kicking off a new chapter for the college. He's just new into town from Atlanta, where he worked as a key administrator at Grady Memorial Hospital and also held posts at the Emory University School of Medicine. Now, Haley's experience leading a large city safety net hospital, that's Grady, will certainly be of assistance in guiding UF Health Jacksonville, which has a lot coming up on the horizon. Dr. Leon Haley Jr., a pleasure and good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for allowing me to be here today.
Welcome to town. Good to have you. You'll be the new dean of the University of Florida College of Medicine here in Jacksonville. Huge operation, but you have some experience. You rose up the ranks in Atlanta at Emory University, were a key administrator at Atlanta's Grady Memorial Hospital. So you've run a large, even larger safety net hospital than the one we have here. What do you see as the biggest challenges and opportunities for UF Health, College of Medicine, as you take over this new position here in North Florida?
Well, one of the main challenges that UF Health, Jacksonville, and all healthcare institutions have right now is there's a lot of unknown. We have a new administration that takes office this coming Friday. There's been lots of discussions about what to do with the Affordable Care Act, some repeal plans. And so I think there's a lot of unknown around healthcare financing, where the economics are going to be to support healthcare in the future. That being said, I'm happy to be here. Very excited. I think there's lots of opportunity as UF Health Jacksonville. We have a new campus going up north, up near the airport. I think that most people are aware of. Our medical office tower has been open for several months now. We have an emergency department there that sees over 40,000 visits a year, and our new hospital tower should open in May. So that will allow us to have an opportunity for people to deliver babies closer to where they currently are. We'll have inpatient units. And so there's lots of opportunity from the standpoint of continuing to develop the UF Health brand and developing our clinical care focus. On the main campus, we're going to focus in on the things that we really want to be great at, which is clinical care. I think about the four-part mission in healthcare. So we want to be excellent in clinical care. We want to be excellent educators. About 40% of our graduates in our residency program stay in the Jacksonville area. We want to do groundbreaking research and innovation. And finally, we really want to make some commitments to the community.
In what way?
Well, I think, one of the things about healthcare is as we move forward, we talk a lot about population health. And so there's an opportunity for us to make a better opportunity to, work with our community leaders, our community environment, the city, the state to say, okay, we're not going to just take care of any one person, but we need to work together to figure out how to collectively think about social determinants of health. It's very easy for us to prescribe medications for patients and then they don't have the economics to support it. So how can we bridge that gap? So we've got to work with all of our legislative leaders, our community leaders, and quite honestly, the business community to think about how can we do a better job of taking care of patients in Jacksonville.
And as you look at the clinical issues, let's circle back to the political issues. As we wait to see what happens with the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, Republicans in D.C. have already started efforts to dismantle parts of the ACA. UF Health, the city's only safety net hospital, has operated on thin economic margins for many years. The state's failure to expand Medicaid has also stressed the financials at UF Health. This is a lot for you to take on. Of course, you would have been in the same boat up in Atlanta. But let's say that the ACA, Obamacare, is repealed without an immediate replacement. And we continue to see the lack of Medicaid expansion here in Florida, which places a big burden on UF Health Jacks. What keeps you up at night as you start this new position? What's the worst case scenario for UF Health Jacks financially and for patients? When we look at these political things.
The challenge is the patients will always be there. People will always get sick, whether that's a function of their medical illness, hypertension, diabetes, asthma, or whether that's a function of traumatic events, car accidents, shootings like we had yesterday, unfortunately.
Right.
So those things will always occur. So the patients will be there. What our concern is, what my fear is, of course, is they'll still be there, but we won't have a way to pay for them. And so we're going to have to continue to provide care, which we like to do. That is part of our mission and is part of what we do. But then we're going to have this increasing gap of, you know, what we can do, what we are funded to support, be able to do, but the patients are still going to be there. And so you talk about an organization that may be on thin ice, we could become thinner. And that's really our challenge. How do we mm-hmm. continue to provide this excellent patient care when the economics don't support it? And so I think there was an article in the Wall Street Journal in the last week or so that says, you know, people will continue to get sick. We just have to figure out a way to find it. So if at a federal level there's no funding, then at a state, city, local level, we're going to have to collectively, and this can't be just UF Health, Jacksonville. It's got to be us plus our city leaders plus our state politicians working together to figure out how are we going to take care of people who are ill.
Right. And make the case to the legislature. It's my understanding as well that should UF Health Jacks not be able to treat everyone who comes to the doors needing care, which is your mission in some respects, the strain that would place on all of the other hospitals around this region, I don't think people have fully grasped what that might mean for the whole system of care all over this Northeast Florida area if you can't fulfill your mission fully.
No, and I don't think people understand that. We went through a similar scenario in Atlanta back in 2008, 2009. There were some really real big indications that Grady Memorial Hospital, for example, would close. But we had done some preliminary calculations that said, you know, this you're going to close a 110,000 volume emergency department. That's going to result in, you know, 20,000 more visits to a local emergency department, around 20 more admissions per day. It's going to stress the system. So what happened in Atlanta was the business community, the political community banded together to say, we can't let this great institution close. And hopefully what I hope to bring is sort of that experience, and then I can work with our leadership.
What did you learn from that experience?
That it takes a community effort. And so what really worked in Atlanta was the community, and I'm really talking about in many respects the business community, sort of business leaders, the Coca-Colas, the Deltas of the world that said, hey, you know, we have to really make sure that this works well, because if we're going to be a world-class city, if we're going to have Super Bowls and Final Fours, then we have to have a well-functioning healthcare system, which means we need a well-functioning trauma center and safety net. That's mm-hmm. the same with UF Health Jacksonville. We want to be part of this city's greatness. We want to contribute to how it can become a world-class leader. And so in order for us to do that, we've got to work with our business, civic, legislative community to collectively decide that.
Well, after going through that fire up in Atlanta, you certainly are well poised for the, I'm sure will be a lot of great opportunities, but maybe also some challenges ahead. And it's such a pleasure to see you here in town. Congratulations and welcome to Jacksonville. Thanks so much. Hope you'll come back and visit us soon.
Absolutely. Anytime you would like to have me back.
He's Dr. Leon Haley Jr., and he is the new dean of UF College of Medicine here in Jacksonville. And in a moment, singer-songwriter Eric Taylor. Keep listening.
Groundwater is disappearing worldwide as farmers race to pump as much as possible.
We'd almost be better off if our house were burning to the ground as I speak rather than having our well go dry.
And political tensions are rising.
Yeah, whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting.
Water Wars on the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Independent music transcends genre, form, and age. At Indie Endeavor, we endeavor to shine a light in the little explored dark corners of your musical imagination. Everything from new to old, foreign to domestic, electronic to acoustic, we play it all. Indie Endeavor Tuesdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, Texas singer-songwriter Eric Taylor is regarded as a guitar master and also an unsung hero of blues and Americana music. Taylor performs at the Mudville Listening Room Thursday night in Jacksonville. That's right where Beach and Atlantic come together. He told me what inspires his songwriting.
My performance is part theater, part songwriting, part acting, part storytelling. You know, I'm not your average song and dance guy. I write songs about, you know, people and their purpose and the good things that happen to them and sometimes the rough time. I try to write songs about people that interest me.
You can check out his show. It's Eric Taylor, Thursday night at Mudville Listening Room. We're going to close with a little bit more of his music. Hope you enjoy it. Thanks for listening to the show this morning, and thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Make sure to subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and through the WJCT app. And next on 1A, why dozens of Democratic members of Congress say they plan to boycott Donald Trump's inauguration on Friday. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again tomorrow at 9 a.m. Have a great day.
I don't want no long lost brother. Raven Julia.
Presenting Next Avenue, a website from WJCT created specifically for adults discovering life after 50. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue.
Sponsored in part by AARP. Real possibilities.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.